Welcome to the Tea and Trails podcast. Hope your training is going well, but don't worry if not. We're not a judgy group. We're not a judgy podcast. You do you. And thank you to all our partners who provide discount codes for our ACE Patreons. We have Precision Fuel and Hydration, Tiki Boo, Mountain Fuel, Outdoor, Develop Forte, Silver, Active Route, The Centurion Running Store, Protein Rebel, SportShoes.com, Big Bobble Hats, X Miles, Fawnside Farm Cottages, Ugoku Projects, Red Bear Sports, Summit Crazy, and Ultra Trails 2. If you'd like to save some money and support the podcast and our partners, then please consider joining Patreon. We couldn't do this without our Patreons. It's as simple as that. And maybe even treat yourself over at Summit Crazy if you'd like some awesome Tea and Trails merch. Oh, take two.
You know when you're in class, when you were at school and your friend was like reading stuff out and you were like, you had to sit and you're like, don't disturb them. Don't do anything silly. Keep the face neutral. I have to like clench my hands together to stop.
Oh, I used to pull faces. I was a terrible friend.
I just have no, I don't find it really hard to not be a distraction generally. It drives, even when like my kids are really like sitting at the table and they're doing their homework, I just like go up and poke.
Leave me alone.
Episode 49. It's almost our year anniversary. We're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate by sharing 200 miles together, Gary. I think there's talk that it's 208 miles.
Range. Oh my goodness me.
Miles are better. If I'm paying to come over, if I'm paying for that van, I want Aero 250. Episode 49. This week, we have a chat with Stuart Smith and Mike Parsons, probably quite familiar names to some of you, all about the art of layering. Gary and I get schooled. We go to school and get schooled on clothing type. Mike has written an amazing book, which I have bought. I love it. And I've been reading it, Keeping Dry and Staying Warm. This talk, it blew my mind a bit about, it's changed the way I'm thinking about my kit, the way I wear my kit. So hold fire, dear listeners, and wait for that interview. It's brilliant.
I've changed actually on quite a lot of runs recently. I'm not going to spoil the interview, but yeah, I definitely layer up slightly different.
Yeah, I like it. I've changed my outer layer as well.
Exactly.
Oh, hello. Love it. But I also find, I mean, at the beginning of this podcast, you said we're not judgy, but now when I meet my friends for runs and they're in garments that you need to listen
said
to,
garment.
I go judgy. I go, yeah. If you had read Keeping Dry and Staying Warm, I've been studying how to wear my hood recently, Gary, and what I've been doing wrong for so many years. I've also got a picture in here. It's on page 3 of you and me. Can you see? I think you're the one on the right.
All right.
Left.
All right.
Large, two large men. With lots of buckles and ones are slightly larger. Anyway, we move on.
Thank you to Precision Fuel and Hydration for sponsoring this week's show. Patrons get 15% off, and anyone can get 15% off their first order with the code, all caps, TANDTRAILS15. That is TANDTRAILS15.
You can find all our sponsors and Patreon partners at www.tandtrails.com or in the show notes. Oh, Gary, let's start with me because my week was truly the worst week of our 50 weeks of recording. And then yours was brilliant. And so we can take the listeners right down into the doldrums. They can just feel my pain. And then you're going to bring them up with a...
I'll try.
We can try.
Oh, your first sentence. Oh, my goodness me.
Oh, it was awful. It was a total write-off. Okay, so we started when we recorded last week. Let's rewind. I was really tired. I sort of finished my last big upper lock of training. So I thought I'm going to give myself 2 days rest. Always do that if I do get into a bit of it. I take 2 days rest and I spend the time hovering around the fridge. Getting the calories in, massive calories, always feel better. So I thought, I'm going to do that. Then my kids came down with something terrible. It wasn't COVID. I kept thinking this must be COVID. They're so ill. I don't remember. And I know everybody that listens to this podcast, but my children are very rarely like really ill. You know, do you remember your mum and dad? Like they always made you go to school. I'm one of those. go along and just see how you feel. I'm one of those, but they were so ill, like temperatures, fevers, hallucinations. I felt too guilty to even like run on the treadmill. So I ended up like not running for the whole week. Eventually got them back to school on the Thursday and thought, I'm going to, you know, I talked about this. I'm just going to enjoy the day. It was bluebird day. Snow on the ground, but like blue skies. It was really cold wind. And there just happened to be a cloud inversion. So when I dropped Evie off at school, it was all in the cloud of Morzine. So I went off, changed my layering system to suit the dry but cold outing, set off absolutely freezing. I think you messaged me. Did I send you a picture? I think I took a picture, but I looked like the hermit. Terrible. I don't know if I sent it. Anyway, it's freezing. But then I got up above the clouds into the most beautiful blue sky. Beautiful walk. I pat myself like four loads of peanut butter sandwiches. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Didn't take a tea flask because I'm wearing a 12 liter for the winter 200. And with all the mandatory kit in, there just isn't room. Like in my spine pack, I always had room down the side, always room for the tea flask, but I just didn't have room. And I didn't want to take out any of the kit. I wanted it to be true weight for what it was. So I didn't take a tea flask, but just took water and peanut butter sandwiches, set off. Oh, had such a lovely day. It was really windy up at the tops, what I call windy corner, which is when you sort of climb up to this col and it opens out and you can hear the wind. Oh, it's so magical. You can hear the wind like rushing through the gap, and then you just have to drop down the other side and it's silent. Yeah, it's so weird.
And now you're on your own all this time. Did you see anybody?
Myself, apart from on the way up the track. So no one had walked up the track, but I knew that the snow would be like ankle deep, but I'd still be able to get up there. But it would be the last time now. We're under, it's still snowing now. I won't get up high unless I put my skis on until like June. So I really wanted to make the most of it. And I said, I'm just going to walk because it takes the pressure off then. You can just, have I tried to run on that, I'd have been sweating and all sorts of other terrible things. So the only thing that accompanied me, Gary, the dogs and the wolves.
Were they circling? Were they doing a move on you?
But I saw the big paw print, and they're different to dogs. They're much bigger. They're literally like the size of your hand, and they've got like the claw you can really see. And I was following them up thinking, do I want to see wolves? I don't know. Then I watched Planet 3 and I saw the wolves as well. I was like, I'm so glad I didn't see the wolves. I thought that was really cool. Just me, the dogs.
Oh, what a treat that would have been, though, to see them.
People do see them around here quite a lot. There is a pack that live. Because sometimes people see them like crossing the piste and stuff. I think the dogs would probably scare them off rather than the other way around. A big, long hike. 5-6 hours it was. I was out. Hiking is tiring. Maybe
it's the ages too.
But I did over 2,000 meters of climbing, I think, in it. So there wasn't a lot of running in it. But I made such an error, Gary. So I used my poles, which I haven't used since Totret, because I've just been running and I haven't been doing a ton of climbing. Used my poles. And when I use my poles, I over. Brew with the coach's question we talked about. I overstride, and I think I definitely overstride on my left leg, and I get a bit of bursitis in my knee, and I always have a bit of bursitis in my knee throughout the summer when I'm polling, but it's tiny. I don't normally notice it very much at all. Anyway, so I did the run, did the walk, didn't think anything of it, but I did use my poles for most of the time for both uphill and stabilization in the snow. Felt fine, came home, and the next day, then I walked the next day because child who managed to go to school then could only cope with that and had to stay at home. So I just had to walk the dogs. I think I took child with me to say, like, come on, let's just get some fresh air and move. As I came down, we sort of cut down this field. I felt my knee go again, didn't really think anything of it. Then the next day, so this is Saturday, I went to take the dogs for a little jog. It was snowy. My knee was so sore. And I was like, it'll wear off, you know, run it off. Got to like 40 minutes into the run. I was like, oh my God, it's so sore. And I looked down and literally it looked like it was enormous. But I was raging because I was like, oh, I finally got out of the house. I can run. Bryn was back because he'd been away all week. And I was like, just hobbled. I was not.
And do you think this was connected to the poles or that?
Oh, definitely. Because so I was like, oh my God, I've done my ACL. This is it. It's all over. I can't bend my knee. Bryn just kept looking at me because I just, I was literally like hobbled all weekend. Went to a local Christmas fair. I know, disgraceful having a Christmas fair in November, but enjoyed it. Bought a few little lovely little Christmas decorations, hobbling around, people going, oh my goodness, what's wrong? And you're just like, oh wait, don't want to talk about it. Anyway, it's gone down. It's going down every day. It doesn't really hurt that much. It still is a little bit swollen. So I'm absolutely sure it's from that poling. And I just feel stupid that I did that. I should have just walked without the poles, but I just never thought. Anyway, it's done. It's fine. It doesn't really hurt.
It's crossed. Oh my goodness me.
No, it hurt anymore. It's just still a bit, tiny bit swelling on the outside. But my lovely sports therapist, who has been on holiday for 6 weeks, Gary, she is coming back, and I've booked 3 appointments.
I've got the wrong job. I need to be a sports therapist.
I don't think so. She works like when the winter comes. That's her holiday. That she will work every day. Hours and hours and hours. So she's back and she was like, do you want an appointment? I was like, I'll take everything. She gave me all these options. And I was like, I'll have them all. So fingers crossed that the knee's all right. It doesn't really hurt to run, but I ran on the treadmill this morning and it didn't hurt at all because the treadmill's not really running, is it? It's like a later. And I'm just gonna be super cautious, keep the icing, keep the movement, keep the yoga. Yoga feels good now.
I keep forgetting you're doing yoga. Steady away. I love it.
Yeah. Sometimes I Strava it because I can't be bothered. So I'm like, I'm just gonna time, okay, 15 minutes. Do it. But it has slightly set me back. I'm a bit scared to do squats, do the gym. I'm gonna go to the gym this afternoon and just see what, get it moving a bit. Feels better for moving. You kind of need to listen to your body with this, don't you? And mine actually feels better for movement. Doesn't really want to go downhill, obviously. So,
but especially now, you're not going to get any fitter for the race.
No, I just mentally just feel better, especially after last week was, I'm not going to lie to you, Gary, it was rough around the edges, no sleep, it was awful. And then not being able to like get out and do stuff. And then I just lost the will. I was just like, well, I can't do anything. So there's not even a point me doing core work. And that's, I felt horrible. I did not feel good about myself.
It's a horrible feeling. I remember Lakeland 100 the week before when my HRV was dipping and I felt bad. It was just like, my goodness me, I've had such a good run. And this week of all weeks, why? It just didn't feel fair at all.
I tell you what, though, I tell you this for free, Gary. By the end of the week, Sunday night, my HRV was 60 and I had 100% sleep. Slept for 9 hours. It took 100% me a whole week. It took me a whole week. And then as soon as I've gone back to running again, it's gone down again. So, but it shows you how long it takes. So I will be really mindful of that. I have cut my running down now and I'm watching other people do tapers and stuff thinking, I don't think we taper enough. I think we don't respect how long it takes our body to recover from the training load and life. The stress of life is so much on us that is a load as well, and that doesn't go away. We can't go, sorry kids, do you mind? There's the fridge, fend for yourself for the next week because my HRV is a little bit low. That would be nice. Obviously some nights I do that and I say free for all, find what you can in the Tupperware. Annoying. Oh, just one of those weeks. And I touch wood. I mean, I've had a really good run of it this year. I've had a really good run of it. 1 week of total wipeout is not really going to make any difference. But I did have time. I did a lot of crew planning for you, making the spreadsheet. James has just added 2 more crew points. So that kind of like throws out. Okay. But they're quite good too, because there was near the end, this course, quite a long section where I thought, oh, you're going to say goodbye to me and say, I'll see you in 8 hours. Oh,
at least I get some sleep there.
oh my God, it's all about you, isn't it? So let's see what this week holds so far. Everybody is not healthy. Oh, no, they're still not healthy. But one did ring me from school yesterday saying, oh, I don't feel well. And I was like, how ill are you? Let's just do a stock check here. Can you eat lunch? And he was like, yeah. I was like, right, go and eat your lunch. If you still feel ill, come back and ring me back. And then I never heard from him. I know that's mean, but honestly, I've got a job to do. I've got things to do.
I don't think it's me.
Kardashians to watch, Gary. And if they're around,
below deck.
So my general, by the weekend I was going to send you a message going, that's it, I'm not doing it, I'm not running. It's amazing how quickly you become not an athlete. Like when you're like in our regime, in our training, you know, we get up, we go running, you take your vitamins, you sleep, you look after yourself, and then when that all sort of goes to pot, you suddenly you're like, I don't identify as a runner anymore. Who do I identify as?
It's like a house of cards for me. Just all comes tumbling.
Anyway, I pulled it back. Monday morning, I was like, right, pull those reins back, get back on the strength and running chain. So I think we're going to be all right, Gary. I think we're going to be all right. We can do it. We can do it together. Yeah. Anyway, that's it.
It's all meant to be, Eddie. These little tests, little hurdles to get over.
Right. Come on. Pick us up with some amazing Lake District
business. Oh, wow. Well, yeah, we did. I'll get to that, I suppose. But first things first, a bit of business for the YouTube channel. I got my silver unboxing video out.
Oh, I'm off social media, so hence why I'm not. Right. Yeah, tell me.
And I really, I've not shared it in the actual Tea and Trails Facebook group. I was curious just to see how it went with just YouTube doing its own thing. So I will share it eventually, but we will be doing a proper full review in a week or two when I've got various batteries to try. But I really enjoy making these reviews. Yeah, and people are watching, which is nice. And I'm just trying to be useful, Eddie. I think that's the goal for these. And maybe we'll reach a bit of a wider audience over there too. I missed the cross country, which was a bit of a blow. It's Sedgefield. Without me being there, they seem to be doing pretty good anyway. We are in Division 2, and I think every year Division 2, it's a relegation battle for us. One team gets relegated, so we are second from bottom. So yeah, we got a bit of daylight, and it was the last fixture ever over at Akeley Heads. You remember Akeley Heads from your days in Durham? It's where the police headquarters are, and the county hall, the council offices up near the hospital. No more Akeley Heads, and I'm a bit gutted about that because it's a really, really good course. But you just can't be in two places. One, simple as that. I was over at the Lake District, but I did miss the Sedgefield annual awards too. All happened on, so that was Friday night, and I was traveling at the lakes, and obviously then cross country on the Saturday, and I won two awards. So
stop it. It's content creator and
biggest YouTube channel. No, actually, pretty impressive awards. Actually, one was the individual performance of the year. What, yeah, before? I'll take that. Because I wasn't there, you know, I'm not 100%. I'm not 100% sure if it's for Dragon's Back Race or Lakeland Hundreds. I've not had clarity on that, but either way, I'll take it. And then I won the David Sawyer Endurance Award too. So yeah, recognised for all the miles that I put in, week out. Thank you so much, everybody who voted for me, and David Sawyer, obviously, for awarding me the David Sawyer Endurance Award. I had a pretty good week, actually. 15 times 1 minute. I love that. I'm moving on, actually. No 1 minutes this week. Moving on. Yeah, did strides. Although that's not really a workout, but quite mindful to get strides in every week at least. And I did the elusive 8x3 minutes session. I got to say, I downloaded something from Netflix. It's a running documentary based in Kenya. And that was just it struck a good balance. I tried Robbie Williams. No, I wasn't doing it or on the treadmill. So I watched this.
No, you've got to be relatable on the treadmill, I find. It's got to be like sport, someone else suffering, someone else trying to achieve something. Like Robbie, but he's not. No, you're going to want to sell yourself.
Well, this documentary really made those 3 minutes pass. In 8 minutes, I was going to do seven. I thought, well, if I do seven, I've broken the 20 minutes of work for that workout. But yeah, just cranked that 15 degrees up, put the speed on and just hung on for 3 minutes. Proper rinse myself. I came off that. I had like motion sickness when I came off it and I was dripping with sweat, but I loved it. Really, you just can't, apart from the descending, you're not conditioning your quads, obviously, because you're only going up. But yeah, I just love that treadmill session, but only one. I think I mentioned it last week, if I get the strength and conditioning sessions done, it'll be a miracle. And I did only manage one down the gym. I didn't, because I thought on the Friday, I was so time pressed. I did the 8x3 minutes and then I was going to go straight in the gym afterwards, but no, I couldn't do it. So only one strength session for the week. And then yeah, Fawn Side Farm Cottages, you know, it's such a idyllic place, super quiet in the Vale. You've got mountains either side, lovely runnable trails one side, quite aggressive trails if you go up the kind of Cloughhead, Helvellyn range. Just family times. We did a lovely walk, games in the evening, stargazing one night. We had a lovely clear sky, super freezing cold, but yeah, we could see every star. And Lisa, she downloaded this app, a stargazing app. Have you ever had that on your phone? So you're basically chuck it up to the sky and you can see all the constellations, which because we don't know really, apart from the Great Bear, the plough, pretty much everything else. Yeah. And we were treated, I think, the Saturday night to the lunar halo that made the local news. Pretty spectacular. You know, we had party tea, just perfect trail running. I love that. We went to what's the supermarket called? It's super expensive. Booths. That was it. Went in Booths.
What was on the menu at the party tea?
Oh, loads of crisps, dips, samosas, pakoras, those kind of things.
Oh my God, I am coming around. Yeah. We do a party tea every week. About 5 o'clock, Bryn goes into the kitchen and starts just rolling stuff into pastry, basically. Chopping stuff. And the kids like go in and out, like they'll get bored, but they'll be like, oh, I'll chop the carrot. And we have like, obviously we give like chopped carrots for a little token of nobody eats.
Oh, I love a carrot and hummus. I'm all over that.
Yeah, I do love that. Then we have like a veggie plate. No one touches the veggie plate. A meat plate, some cold meats, cheeses, nuts, crisps. And then we all watch. And Bryn said, we've got to stop doing this. Like, because it's quite... And it's not an expensive way to do it, but we kind of think it's kind of like a treat. Like we all sit around the little table and
playing games.
Like, should we do this every week? And I'm like, yeah, life's too short to like sit the table. We do that every night of every. This is nice, and we get all the goodies. And you feel.
Problem is, I'm eating quiche at like 12 o'clock at night, shoveling that last, finishing off the last bit of quiche or the last bit of pizza or something. Like, I've got no portion control, but yeah.
You should do the party menu. Good one.
Well, Fawnside Farm Cottage is what a really good spot. If you just even like walking, you don't have to go up to Clough Head or places like that. You've got lovely accessible trails. The cottage, it was just so lovely to come back after a cold day out on the trails and just come into a lovely toasty cottage with a log fire. The children had enough space that they could go off and do their own thing. And they were just chilling out too. I think Esme was a little bit resistant. She was very super busy with schoolwork. But yeah, she soon got into the swing of things. It was just lovely. I crashed my drone, which wasn't quite as bad as when I put it in the sea. On the first run I did, I went up to, oh my goodness me, High Seat. Went via Thirlmere, got a few Wainwrights, so went to High Seat. And I set the drone to do these pre-programmed moves. And when it went behind a little ridge and basically lost signal, lost connection with the controller, and then just flew into the side of the mountain.
I don't ever want to go on a plane you're flying, Gary.
I know. Yeah, but initially I was like, oh, not again. I couldn't believe it. But luckily, anybody who's thinking about buying a drone, it has a Find My drone. So you go onto a map and you walk to where it was last seen on GPS, and then you can press a button and it basically will start making a noise and flashing. And I found it absolutely wild. Like in the middle of nowhere, there it was, this little drone going, help me, Gary, help. But I don't know why I didn't learn my lesson, because early in the morning I flew it down the vale, I suppose, towards Skiddaw and Blencathra from where we were staying. And I just took my eye off how far it was away from me. And it must have been about 800 metres, and it lost signal because it was too far away. And my goodness me, I just pressed come back home, and it did. And I was like, oh, thank God for that, because trying to find something that was the best part of a kilometre away is different to something that's 30 metres away. But
Is it broken?
No, it's fine. Worked fine. Got loads of drone footage to share with everybody. it was such a stunning run on day one, especially because the sky was just, oh my goodness, it was amazing, but very boggy on the tops. And where it was super cold, it had frozen the top of the bog. So what happened, they're really kind in some places. They put some lovely flagstones down, so that was nice. But you'll know this from Spine. So you'd break the bog, but then you'd really get this ice kind of dragging up your shins.
God. Oh, the ice shards are the worst, aren't they? Oh.
Yeah, the fun soon wore off with that. I got a little bit lost. I just got so, in the moment, really, just running down the trails, and then looked down at my watch and realised I was getting about 10 minutes. I should have turned right 10 minutes ago. So I had to go back up the mountain. I went to the wrong Wainwright. I had three Wainwrights I was trying to go to, and I think one's called the Amboth Bell. And when I looked on the Outdoor Active app, you know, it's a Patreon perk, Outdoor Active, I looked on where I was, and it said the one next to it again, probably about 400 meters away, was the actual Wainwright. So I was like, oh God, got to go over there. But yeah, just lovely. Absolutely lovely. Just magical trails. And if you're thinking about, you want a running weekend. So basically, if you kind of head to Thirlmere, you've got really accessible trails. That 2-to-1, I got back, it was that 2-to-1 ratio I always talk about if you train for something like Lakeland 100. But then if you want Bob Graham round, you just straight out the back door and up onto the kind of Clough Head, Great Dodd, and those kind of places. So you can get, I think the first mile, on my first mile, were beeped at 40 minutes for the first mile.
Fast round for around here.
And it was 2,000 feet, literally. The first mile was about 2,000 feet of climbing. So yeah, that was pretty wild. So if you want the elevation, just go one way. If you want more runnable trails.
An amazing option to have. That is the dream.
It's that peace time when you're on your own for hours. Day one, I was spent more. Day two, both days I slept in, actually. I didn't put a pressure on family time later on the day. So I was a massive idiot like that. But yeah, day two, I cut my run short. But just being up on those fells, especially when it's cold and there's not loads of people around, you just get hours. You know this quite regularly with your runs, but just hours and hours and hours on your own, fueled like a pro, precision fuel and hydration. This is my kind of rich for a long run. I will do the 1,000 pH or even 1,500, depending on the length of the run, and then hitting those carbs every 30 minutes too. And yeah, I pulled up because I'm in this marathon training where my long runs are pretty much tarmac based. I thought 2 days on the hills, I'm going to have DOMS, but no, pulled up pretty good. So I'll take that. Anything else? Anything else? No, I think that is about it for my week. Yeah, just feel proper nourished. The only downside is, it just went so fast. And before we knew it, we were driving back on Sunday evening. Maybe when both kids have flown the nests, we'll go back and enjoy the full weekend. Because, yeah, we're super busy on Friday. Everyone's at school. Drove over late on Friday evening. Oh, my goodness me. Joanna, she was so sweet. She was still there waiting for us to let us in. And then, yeah, came back early on the Sunday. So, yeah, you blink before you know it, you're traveling back again. But, yeah, I never get tired of Keswick. Christmas lights, Christmas trees. Little picture postcard. Yeah, I loved it.
Too early. It's November.
I'm not really fussed about when the tree goes up, but I must admit, I'm getting a bit itchy. I'm thinking this weekend. But when you're in December, it's not long. Yeah, maybe this weekend the tree goes up. Look at that face. But yeah, I had a good week. Feel really nourished. I ticked all the workouts. The miles weren't huge. I think I dropped in mileage duration. I'm not even checked the time on feet. Elevation was good because I did a couple of thousand feet on the treadmill too. So I'll add that one on the 6,000 or whatever it was I did over on Strava. Yeah, good. I can't argue with that. I think this week I really felt like, yeah, I think I'm finally getting over Dragon's Back race. I felt like I was running again, especially getting back on the trails. It's been so long.
It's about 10 weeks since Dragon's Back.
So it was September the 4th, it kicked off. So whatever that is, yeah, pretty much.
I think these mega things take 10 weeks, about 10 weeks.
Well, I've seen some, albeit the youngest finisher from the Dragon's Back race, I'm pretty sure he did one of the Punk Panther races, which is 100 miler. He may have even done really, really well in that race too. So yeah, if you're 30 years younger, maybe you can recover a lot quicker.
Too many things.
I don't even think my feet had recovered and he was doing another 100 miler, this guy. Yeah, super impressive. But yeah, it just felt like, yeah, because he got big goals next year again, you know, chasing times on the road and the trails. And I was just worried that, wow.
Age for London.
No, I didn't apply this year because I missed it. So that's so Manchester. So it's going to be 2025 if it all comes off. I don't think there's going to be any opportunities to run London in 2024. But yeah, it's super spicy. I think all the good for age places went. It's like 6,000, I think, per slot. I saw some email. So the good for age times, qualifying times, I think you've got to run about 5 minutes faster. So yeah, super, super competitive. But yeah, I love it. I love a big scary goal. So hopefully Manchester, I can do it and then relax a bit, moving on to Lignora. But yeah, it was just nice to feel like, okay, we're running again. It's good. This week's Brew the Coaches question comes from Victoria Henderson. Like Eddie, I'm signed up for the Winter 200 in December, but unlike Eddie, I'm a mediocre runner with no ambitions to win anything. I've obviously managed to finish some longish races, but nothing on this scale. And despite having been really excited about entering the race, I'm now getting more and more worried about completing it. I suppose in a lot of ways, it is no different from approaching your first 100 miler after having done a 50 miler, although 200 miles suddenly seems a very long way. But what mental tricks and tips have you got for getting through the training without becoming too overwhelmed by the prospect of what needs to be done? And how do you mentally approach a race when the finish line feels a little bit too far away? Many thanks, Victoria Henderson. There is a PS. I have three children who are all very busy with their own sporting and social lives, which all require my input. But Eddie also manages that, so I can't use that as an excuse. Also, I have a job as a hospital doctor, but there are loads of doctors producing amazing podium finishing results. So that excuse has gone as well. Oh my goodness, Victoria. Yeah, your shit might look like other people's shit, but it's not. it's your shit. So yeah, your life is definitely different. But yeah, Eddie, come on, she referenced you. Do you want to start with this one?
First of all, huge kudos from us all. We're all on this Zoom call smiling away for sticking your hand up and entering a race like that, which takes guts. Even just training for a race like that will have taken a huge amount of preparation, planning, and mental focus. It is not easy. So give yourself kudos for, you know, saying I want to try it, and hopefully you're going to get to the start line. We are recording this just a week or two before the race now. So your training is done. So we can't really talk about how to juggle the training. We can talk about like the mental. We've all done big stuff that when you stand on the start line, or even you get to like a couple of weeks before the race and you're thinking, oh, I can't do this. How am I going to do this? It seems impossible, but that's why we sign up and that's why we do it. So don't think that because you're thinking, oh my God, I can't do this, you can't do it. That is just the natural response. That's the natural response of 99.9% of people that will say, I can't do this. We are the 0.1% that are going to try. Okay. So firstly, give yourself confidence that you're going to try this. My biggest thing is not to think about the whole distance. If you think you can't think about the whole distance, it seems impossible. It's going to become insurmountable in your head. It's just going to become too much. So I would spend the week or two before the race breaking down the race into from the big checkpoints to the big checkpoints. You've got four checkpoints. You can work it out. I've already done this for you, Victoria. So you've got about between 40 and 50 miles between each checkpoint. And within all those little checkpoints, within all those little segments, you've got little bits, little stepping stones. So all you have to think about is the next part, the next 8 miles, the next 10 miles, how you're going to get there. And within that, what you're going to do, how you're going to fuel, look at the map. So really just work, just go down really into the micro bits of this so that you are not ever thinking, you can't even allow yourself to think of the finish. You just have to think of each of those little spots. Those are your little micro races within that. I'm going to get to that point. I'm going to get to that point. Running 200 miles is so different from anything you will ever have done. You can't even compare it to a 100-mile race, because with a 100-mile race, the ending is normally within that 24 hours, within that 30 hours. With a 200 mile race, the ending is, you don't know when that end is going to come. It can be like, you can throw a spanner in the works and have to slow down, and it could be 25 hours later. So all you can think about is just looking after yourself, how you're going to look after yourself, and just take it little bit by little bit. And if you know all those little bits, make yourself some little checkpoint cards with all those little bits. Then when your brain goes to adult, you just have to look, right, 4 miles I've got till I get to the co-op in Edenbridge, and I'm so excited. I'm getting to that co-op and I'm going to buy cheddars and a can of Coke and a banana, and I'm going to sit and I'm going to WhatsApp the family. Then I'm going to go on. Then I'm going to do the next 6 miles. And the biggest thing I learned from the spine was treating it as an adventure. It's not a race. The only person that's going to get you to the finish line is you. You take no notice of what anyone else is doing. And that first 100 miles, this is what is so freaky of saying, you've got to take it really slow, really, really slow. That first 100 miles is just about looking after yourself. And the second 100 miles is just about looking after yourself. But if you get that first 100 miles under your belt without racing it, trying not to break a sweat, just really nice and easy. Keep feeding yourself. The next 100 miles will be so much better. So those are my biggest things, is just looking at it as an adventure. It's an adventure. You say you've got three kids. Oh my gosh, you're a doctor as well. This is a holiday. It's going to be easier than juggling the kids' social calendar, your work, the hospital. All you have to do is just keep putting cheddars, hula hoops, cheese and pickle sandwiches, drinking Coke. Then you'll get to checkpoints and the lovely people that just look after you. If you're like Gary, they'll just take your shoes off for you and give you tea. Though it's hard, it is an adventure, and it will be the best adventure, whatever the outcome. I promise you that you'll ever have Victoria. So try, though you're looking at it with loads of apprehension, try and look at it with a little bit of nervous excitement as well. And just think of all that lovely fresh air and nobody wanting anything. Everyone will just want to give you stuff all the way around. Sweeties, honestly, though it's hard physically and mentally, there is also some really good times too. So don't just focus on the pain. It will hurt as well. Hope that helps. I can't wait to see you at the start line. We'll have a big hug. Gary too. We'll have a sandwich. Sorry, sandwich. Rebecca, you've got a busy life as well. Also a doctor, juggling everything. Any tips on life?
I think, as doctors, we are in a profession which at times can be quite competitive, cutthroat. It does lead to some issues with what you can describe as comparing and despairing. So the more you compare yourself to others, it very rarely leads to sort of positive outcome. So I think focus on the fact that you've made it to the start line, you've done all that training, and on top of that, you have three children and you're a hospital doctor. So there is no comparison or excuses required. You've done brilliantly, and kudos to you. And I think, compare and despair, that's the phrase. So avoid that and you'll be absolutely fine. And that goes through your training and through the race as well. So just focus on what you're doing. And as Eddie said, segment it down, just get to the next little checkpoint and then the next bit and then the next bit, just get it done, because you have undoubtedly in your role as a hospital doctor faced a lot of adversity and come through so many things where you've been tired and emotional and you still got the job done.
Love the doctor to doctor chat. She was like, I recognize you. I see you there.
I see you.
Trish, Russell, anything to add for anybody perhaps signing up for something that they think?
I agree with everything that Eddie said. I would just reiterate that. And I always think of it as a big day out. I'm going to have a big day out. I'm going to have lots of snacks. Oh, I don't have to worry about the kids. That for me is like the pinnacle. I don't have to worry about anyone else but myself. All I have to do is move forward and stuff my face. It's a great day. I mean, like, literally, what more do you want? I mean, you're smashing it, Victoria. I honestly, massive kudos. I mean, incredible that you've trained for a 200 miler with three kids and role as a doctor. I mean, amazing. I mean, you know, I struggle with Thomas shoelaces some days. So you are winning. You are smashing life. Just 100%, my key thing for big distance races is don't think of the distance, think of the effort. Constantly think of the effort. It's a big, big race. So stay in zone two. Don't burn your candle too quickly. Keep it chilled. Focus on moving forward, eating some snacks. You're going to be awesome. Amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Like these guys have said, I would suggest that you've already been doing the training, three kids and job as a hospital doctor, probably a bit of sleep deprivation thrown in there, I would guess. And so that rules me out straight away. So you're already way ahead in loads of ways that you probably don't even realize that are just going to play in your favor when it comes up. Because, I can't deal with sleep deprivation at all. I would be useless. You'll find me somewhere in a heap on the side of the road and you'll be able to keep going because you've had to do that so many times before. So I'm sure it's going to go great. The other thing with mental approach just on that is that it's probably a good thing that you're scared of this as well. And confidence isn't a prerequisite to you running well. It's fine if you're having doubts that can help you perform well. I like to think of confidence as like a butterfly that comes into your garden. It's pretty, it's nice to have, but you don't need it. You've still got a solid foundation, great lawn, or the fruit trees, flowers, whatever. And so if you're having doubts or you're worried about it, that's fine. As long as you approach it like these guys are saying, just chunk it one step at a time, effort-based, yeah, the finish line will come to you. Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. I think you're crushing it, Victoria. I sometimes, because we have such a quite a fluid life, maybe lots of us do, as a podcaster, that I can just go and do a run, grab a run at say 2 in the afternoon. But anyone who's three kids and a busy, busy job and training for a 200 mile, my goodness me, you need a double kudos button for that, I think, on Strava. Apologies for not getting out any sooner, just the scheduling. But yeah, we'll try and get this out on the 1st of December. So yeah.
You might be listening to this as she's starting. That'll be it. She'll be an emotional.
Good luck.
Best of luck, Victoria. Yes, say hello if you see us. You've got this super busy life and yeah, crushing it. Yeah, definitely say hello. I'm sure it's 200 miles, Eddie. We're bound to bump into it at some point.
For sure. Hopefully in the co-op buying cheddars and Coke.
This week we chat with Stuart Smith and Mike Parsons. Yeah, this interview was inspired by a post on our Facebook group. And yeah, loads of great tips and information shared. And as we both said earlier on in the show, Eddie and I both changed our layering system off the back of this chat. So yeah, like I say, loads of great tips. Hopefully improve your layering and knowledge of kit that you are wearing and buying. I've had this one garment on my clothes peg for years and years and years, unused. And now it's probably the most used bit of item.
But it's the same as what I've been using.
Yeah.
Let's leave them hanging. Here's our interview with Stuart and Mike. We are delighted this week to be joined by, I think, probably our most prestigious guests ever, Mike Parson and Stuart Smith. I'll give a little background on how these guys have come on the podcast. There was a Facebook chat which spiraled out of control. I think it was an innocent question: what is the best waterproof jacket to buy? And there was about 75 comments on which waterproof jacket is the best and why. And of course, everybody has strong opinions about this. And I think Stuart weighed in with a few bits of advice, but then went, Mike is the guy if you've got questions about jackets. So we bundled them together, kidnapped them together, and we've got them both on the show. And we've just read out what we're going to ask them about. And Mike said that's going to take about 3 hours. So buckle up if this is your long run, because you're going to be in for a treat. Gary and I are going to be, we've already said, we'll be prepared to be schooled on everything that we think we know about kit and that we don't know. So welcome to the Tea and Trails podcast, Stuart and Mike.
Thank you. Hello.
Before we are schooled, though, could you share with us your background in business-wise and outdoor activity-wise? And yeah, I suppose start with you, Mike.
Okay. Well, I was Carrymore for about 30-odd years until 96. And during that time, I supplied all the major Himalayan expeditions, Bonington stuff, Doug Scott stuff and so on, worked with a lot of the leading expeditionary people in the UK and so on. And I've done lots of activities on over 7 continents on all sorts of different activities, from running and dog sledding and skiing and bike riding, everything. I've done most activities, a little bit on water like sea kayaking and so on. And then during my Carrymore life, I took on the full sponsorship of the 2-day mountain marathon. And then when Jerry Charney was killed on Helvellyn, we took over the event. My sister Jane ran it for about 30 years, and it eventually became known as the KIM, the Carrymore International Mountain Marathon. And after I left Carrymore, then we changed the name again to OM, Original Mountain Marathon. This event started back in 68, and that's going to be another podcast.
Mike, how many OMs have you done?
About 45. but that's in several different countries, because we had a 2-day mountain marathons in Norway, Switzerland, France, and so on.
Yeah, I noticed that actually when we've been looking at the Yom, it's not just a UK event, is it? I think Japan, oh my goodness me, there's somewhere else too. Yeah, super interesting. And when did, so with Carrymore, did you start, were you at Carrymore from the very beginning?
Well, the small manufacturing operation was conceived apparently about the same time as I was. During the Second World War.
Okay, all right.
I suggest if we go any further, we'll need another 2 hours.
Need another 2 hours. Awesome. Yeah, over to you, Stuart.
Hello, everyone. I work full-time as an international meeting leader, which sounds a bit grand, but I'm sort of qualified to work all over the world. I've taken part in 28 OMS or KIMS or something like that. I've never been particularly successful in some. I've even run off the map on one of them. And that's a slightly different story, though. And I blamed Mike, obviously. I've worked full-time in the outdoors. I've taken part in quite a lot of events. I used to cycle race. I used to mountain bike race. We did like a fully solo crossing of Iceland, fully self-contained. It took us about 4 weeks in when mountain biking first started out, really. Ooh, many years ago, 1987, I think, something like that, when I was about four. I was like a child prodigy of cycling at one point. If you believe that, you believe a lot of things I might tell you as well, then.
I'll believe anything, Stuart. I'm really gullible. Yeah.
I've subsequently come to work on quite a lot of events as I've sort of slowed down and got fatter and more injured and like falling off mountains and being avalanched or whatever it was, sort of thing. And then, so I've worked on quite a lot of long distance events. I've sort of taken part in quite a lot of long distance events, 100 milers, 5 days along Polish Czech border and things like that. And then I've ended up doing lots and lots of different events now, being part of the safety team. So people may have come across me. Gary being one of them recently on his holiday through Wales, from North Wales to South Wales. So I ended up doing lots and lots of kit check-in. I've worked with Mike on some designs and testing for OMM, and I still do some testing and designs for other companies as well. That's about it, really, at the moment. For an ex-trumpet player, when I used to play trumpet in a band, I'm like a pretty rubbish that blowing me on trumpet, if that makes sense.
I didn't know that. It's always good to see you, Stuart. And I, you know, appreciate there's people like you out there just to keep us safe. But yeah, I must admit, I love it seeing you in a checkpoint. I don't want to see you up on the high fells or the mountains. But yeah, it is great to have you guys around.
Oh, I think one of my little memories was sort of seeing you down near Storey Arms and Joe Faulkner, an ex-Dragons back contender, well, finished about four and a bit of them, I think, 4.25, I think he says. And obviously a colleague of mine, not obviously, but a colleague of mine who I've worked with on very many occasions on NAV4 events and on training courses that Mike asked us to put together 20 years ago or something like that.
I suppose the book was highlighted in the Facebook conversation. So yeah, could you describe your book, Keeping Dry and Staying Warm?
It was a result of long-term collaboration with an academic at Lancaster University. And we wrote our first book called Invisible on Everest, and that was a full history of outdoor clothing and outdoor gear. Then after that, I was invited to teach at the university, and we were teaching innovation, not in outdoor products, but of anything. And then as we retired from that, we decided to set up an operation that continued writing and so on. So we set up an operation called Outdoor Gear Coach. What it was clear was that there was a marked absence of a piece of literature, a guide that was not connected to the brands and the marketing and so on. It was a factual record of this is what's happening, because everything before that and after that book is brand related. Well, don't forget, I'm speaking as a former brand owner. Yeah. If you're a brand owner, you point out what is good about your brand because you want to sell your product. That's not wrong. You have people to employ. and keep them in work and so on, but it doesn't provide a balanced set of information. The book we have written took about 3 years and a lot of research and so on, lots of things I didn't realize I didn't know. So it's the only independent book about garments. And during that, it needed to ensure that we got a very balanced view on it. We needed a broader number of people. It could not be one or two people's voices. And so Stu collaborated well. Everything that we were doing was done on Google Docs. Everybody could have access from the early point and so on. And I asked several leading people. So the book was a collaboration of five different people, including Al Hinks for his high altitude experiences. He's done all 14,800ers. We also included a guy in the States called Chuck Kukla, and he works for a retail store in area in USA called REI, which is one of the largest stores, and he's a staff trainer. But he also happens to be a retired chemical engineer. And so he's rather good at understanding things like heat losses. So I remember writing one day about technical on the heat losses, and he's looking in on the garment, and he just put a comment to the side and said, "By the way, Mike, did I tell you my PhD is in this area?" I said, "Oh, I'm in safe hands, Chuck." So that gives you an idea of the diversity of people that we pulled in, you know, to get real facts, independent facts into that book.
It is factual, isn't it? Because sometimes, say, maybe with footwear, it's quite subjective, while the materials do the job based on the on the information, the science that you've gathered.
What I find out, I've done the odd tests and so on, and as we're doing our talks on performance layering, sometime I'll ask, how many people here have a basic, say, O-level equivalent of physics or chemistry? And only about a third of people do. And so many of the myths and misunderstandings that occur in terms of how garments or footwear, for that matter, or tents, for that matter, occur are... some of the myths occur because people have little or no understanding of simple, basic, O-level, what's it called, GCSE level physics, yeah? And so in our performance layering courses, we do cover the basics of heat loss, because garments do not provide the warmth. They prevent its loss.
Let's talk a little, can we delve a little bit into that performance layering? This is a new, Mike, you've introduced this new terminology to me. I want to perform. I need to layer. Tell me a little bit about, you've already told me off already because I called this chat about layers and you said, Eddie, it's not layers. Tell me a little bit about what you mean by performance layering.
Okay, let's go back. Surprise, surprise, 40,000 years.
Oh, you're not going to mention the intestines again?
No, I'll promise not to, otherwise you'll give me a horrified look. The earliest evidence of a sewn stitched garment is 40,000 years ago, which for, if there are any geologists or glaciologists listening to this, that was before the last glacial maximum. In other words, a big ice sheet that covered almost all North America and most of the UK. Garments have been overlooked in a certain way, and they should be considered perhaps almost as important as the control of fire. Now, those original people, when they made those garments, knew intimately every detail. They weren't just crude people and basic savages. They knew every detail of every type of material that they were using. Which animals were best, which part of the animals were best. Today, the problem is that people have lost completely a knowledge of understanding of textiles. Textile manufacturing has disappeared. I grew up within Lancashire. You can hear my Lancashire accent, just as Stuart did. All the basic inventions in the textile world were invented in the villages around us. But people have lost understanding. So you get, even journalists don't know the difference between a weave and a knit. Well, some people might say it's irrelevant. Well, it's not. You need to understand the materials. So performance layering is a proactive thing. It's not about buying what is being marketed at you. It is about understanding the materials which the products are made of, selecting what you need for the activity, the location, the continent, the time of the year, and the weather forecast, and equivalent, and that's right also for you according to the group you are leading, if you were a group leader and so on. So you need to be able to therefore read a garment. Reading a garment, Stuart has a nice way of defining it, and that's the five F's, including function, fit, fashion, and so on.
What, the five F's, Stuart?
I thought of it as a way of, if I'm going into a shop, if I'm buying something or I'm looking on something online, I thought of it as my little flow chart of buying stuff. So first one would be fit. If it doesn't fit me, I'm a little sort of dwarfy sort of bloke, so I end up standing up on Joe Faulkner's table, get my trousers shot, and quite a lot, really. So fit, if it doesn't fit or if it's not easily tailored, don't buy it because it's not quite right for you. Second one was function. If you, what are you going to use it for? How are you going to use it? What's it going to do for you? You know, there's a lot of talk about sort of, do I take a mountaineering style waterproof jacket or do I take a flimsy see-through running jacket sort of thing? And I guess then you've got to, you know, whatever function that you're going to be looking for, you know, 6 days going up the centre of Wales or something like that is different than, you know, a 10-mile blast on the fells or something. Fit, function, fashion, do I look sort of good in it? Most things I just look like, right, said Fred in, really, I guess.
Really important. Goes back.
Finance is, yeah, finance is the other one, you know, is it a bargain? Do I actually need it? Am I just buying it because it's online and it's getting, you know, it's Black Friday or whatever it is that's coming up soon and this, that, and the other. And then future. Does it have a future? There's a lot more manufacturers are now looking at this. And some of them are not gluing zips in anymore and things like that. You know, that's just sewing zips in. So you can, if you get a zip that's done, as I've just mentioned, Joe from NAV4 does quite a lot of repairs. A young lady started up in Snowdonia Gear Repair, and they sort of say, you know, zips are the bane of their lives. So does it have a future? And are you sort of friendly with that sort of system? Where's it come from? Gore-Tex is made from polytetrafluorine, ethylene, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, that's an oil-based product. I'm not so happy about oil-based products. So,
yeah,
you know, even bamboo isn't very, very clean product. And therefore, you know, are you happy with that? So that's the five Fs, really.
This opens up a sort of minefield of questions and things. But I think one, and we could talk, like Mike said, we could talk for hours, but I think probably us as runners, the waterproof that is on pretty much every race's mandatory kit. You have to have a waterproof with sealed seams. Is a huge investment for most people. You're looking nowadays at like anything from, I mean, 200 is probably the cheapest you're going to get, up to like 350, 400 for a jacket, which is a big investment for everybody. Often needed to be bought online. So you don't, then you're in the like, oh, I've bought it, I've got it, does it fit? Send it back. Do I actually like it? And if you're like me, as soon as you've worn something and it stinks, you go, it's really hard to. What is the sort of things people should be looking at? Like you said, and also, like you pointed out, Stuart, you need a different jacket potentially as well for that. If you're going for an hour, you want a lightweight waterproof that is just because you're going to generate heat. If you're going for 6 days and potentially overnight, it's a whole different, you're in a different ball game then, aren't you? So
having
to think about the different kit for different activities is hard, but there isn't one jacket is basically what I'm coming down to for.
Everybody loves a bit of retail therapy though. And as soon as you sort of mentioned to somebody, Christmas is coming and you're a trail runner, obviously you're going to get, you know, I don't know, a bottle opener that's like shaped like a trail runner or something like that. Or, you know, it used to be like you'd end up getting red socks that come up to your knees because that's what you went climbing in, sort of thing. So everybody loves a bit of retail therapy, but it's about sort of having some informed choice and some education about what you're actually going to be buying. Mm-hmm. The sustainability, the future is the future. You know, it's going to be what we're going to be buying and looking into. You know, I sort of happened to live through that development of, you know, Gore-Tex coming on the scene, and obviously Mike knows this too. And it was like a wonder thing. It was like space age and everything. And now you've got all sorts of different sort of styles. Even Gore-Tex itself is going to be changing in the next 3 to 5 years due to F, the future sort of thing.
In some ways, there is a complete overemphasis and overfocus on the waterproof jacket.
I know this. This is Mike. Yeah, come on. Go to
However, I have also been a fundamental part of that. In the early days of the KIM, we realized that we needed to create some rules. And the rules were that you needed to have a jacket with a taped seam. The FRA and other events took another 20 years after we introduced our rules before they agreed with those same rules and introducing the rule of the taped seam. Only recently, I wrote an article called The Hill Runner's Lament. Why do I need to wear a waterproof jacket when I'm going to get wet anyway? And so I explained what was getting wet isn't the problem. Having water leaching through all your layers continuously will drain away the heat from your body. And so it becomes another issue. But let's go back to the fundamentals of a waterproof jacket. Everything is based around this mistaken concept of the so-called three-layer system.
Oh, no, it's all wrong.
The three-layer system is not a system. It is a marketing list of these are three essentials, but it does not work as a system. Because what happens is that people put their waterproof jacket on, immediately they hit a strong and cold wind to keep the wind off them. So the most important layer to add is a wind shell.
It's making some. And
when adding a wind shell, you have a very big benefit. One is that you use your waterproof jacket much less frequently. You don't overheat so much, yeah? And as you pointed out, the waterproof jacket is a large investment. Can be £200-£400. But also, it needs regular washing, which is not really understood, and reproofing. So, advice, keep your waterproof jacket in your pack unless it's raining.
Can I ask a question about the wind shell? If people are listening to this thinking, what do you mean by a wind shell?
A wind shell is something that just has water repellency. It's usually priced under £100. Pertex is one of the most familiar brands. Pertex also do waterproofs, but have a look for a garment called a Pertex Quantum. And those are very highly windproof because they've been used for down garments. In case of a down garment, fabric used on a down garment can't be waterproof, because it would condense inside, but it has to be extremely tightly woven. And so Pertex Quantum is used in down jackets, but when used as a single ply, it's extremely good.
When I'd be heading out on the trails, Eddie and I talked about this just before we recorded, actually, the whole waterproof, windproof jacket. And yeah, I think I wouldn't have the three layers. I definitely wouldn't have a windproof layer. I would probably try and multitask my waterproof jacket, but then it wouldn't do the same job as it was as its kind of windproof counterpart. So yeah, that's a great tip for our listeners.
Windproof came about, it's been used for a very long time, obviously, but it came about recently, or more recently, on sort of Pile and Pertex clothing. And that came about like all good things from a bit of a fault finding mission. And somebody was thinking about typewriter ribbons. And the typewriter ribbon disperses the ink, and therefore the fabrics, the Pertex and the windproofs that were built then were designed on typewriter ribbons. Little fun fact.
This is the best school day I've ever been to. When my kids come home from tea, and I'm going to tell them all this because Mike, I live in the Alps, and so the kids they live being feral in the mountains, so they love all this sort of chat. So when I tell them all this, they're going to be. It's going to blow. I might just have to call you up, Stuart, and get you to tell that.
Just going back to the typewriter ribbon. The typewriter ribbon had to withstand multiple strikes of the keys. And as it struck through the ink onto the paper. And it therefore removed the ink from that particular part. But because the nature of the ribbon, the ink wicked back again into that place and was replaced.
Who saw this? Who saw this and thought, that is a good idea? Blows my mind.
Pertex were a company whose original product was typewriter ribbons. And they understood wicking. And if we go back to when we do talks on performance layering courses, we cover the most misunderstood words, and wicking is one of the most misunderstood words. So may I ask you a question? Okay, what's your understanding of wicking?
Well, I'm probably going to get it wrong, but yeah, just I suppose taking the moisture away from your body. That's my initial understanding. But it can go both ways, can't it? It's not like just a one-way street.
Get in, wick it out.
Okay, so why do we want to wick water away?
Cooling, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a look at that. Wicking is really, really, really well misunderstood. First of all, it is not absorption. It is capillary flow. And when we do a course, we explain it by explaining how trees and all plants work. And they work. They don't take in water from the top of the tree. They take water in from the ground, from the roots. And it flows upwards, not by magic or because the tree is able to suck. It flows upwards by capillary flow, which is the movement of water up through narrow, narrow gaps. And the narrower the gap, the higher and more stronger the flow. And so that's where microfibers come into the scene. Microfibers have smaller gaps between, so that helps. And so cotton, for example, does not wick. It absorbs and the surface remains wet, so therefore it's uncomfortable. And you should be using cotton. Wool does not wick, it absorbs. However, it's absolutely fine because the surface remains dry. But because it's absorbed, it takes a little bit of time. It takes longer to dry out than does a synthetic polymer. So when I say to people, well, okay, let's think about this wicking thing, because there's two crux things. And if I did nothing else today, getting across wicking would be the most successful thing. So let's look. Wicking happens not only upwards, not only downwards and upwards. It occurs in all directions. What I find is that a proportion of people, I'm pulling my sleeve up now to explain. I had a friend come to see me a few weeks ago. He had just bought a 450-pound garment. And he was absolutely soaked through. And I examined his garment and it was absolutely in perfect condition. It was new and there's no leakage. And what had happened was that he had his sleeve, his base layer exposed. So if you expose any of your base layers, either in your neck or at your sleeve, or in your legs, if you have wicking leggings, yeah, it will wick upwards. And so sometimes, for effect, I'll point a finger at people at their chest and say, do you realize that wicking works inwards and upwards as well as outwards? And they go, whoops. No. And that's one of the biggest problems of people when people are getting wet. They're not understanding.
But I get so hot when I've got my jacket on, so I have to unzip it. And then I guess it then gets wet.
But it's getting wet anyway from sweating, isn't it?
If you're not closing your jacket over it.
I never do.
Raining. Are you talking about when it's raining?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you open that up, yeah.
I'm a goner.
Yeah, it's going to get soaked. Yeah. So you need
where the windproof comes
wicking work as a first thing to actually make sure. But let's look, for example, at when you're carrying a rucksack and you've got rather sweaty, and you take it off and your back feels cold.
This is the story of my life.
Yeah, so that sweat has come from your body at 37.5 approximately. So it's come out at 37.5. So why do we feel cold? So what's happening is that water conducts heat 24 times faster than air. That's what's happening. Water in the system there is conducting the heat outwards. So that, again, really does surprise people. Some people have said the fact that water conducts 24 times faster than air is very surprising to people. We come back to what's the best insulator? Is it darn or whatever? No, the best insulator is dry air. So that's what we're trying to do when we're looking at layering systems. We're trying to ensure that the layers are moisture-free.
Can we go back? Because I'm already rethinking. So, Mike, I'm doing a 200-mile race in December on the South Downs Way, North Downs Way, wet, cold, potentially outside for two nights, three nights. We'll be carrying a rucksack. Need to pretty much have my kit with me for most of that time. And I'm already questioning not only my life's choices, but now my kit choices as well. But the whole, anyone that's listening as well might be saying, you need to get the basic, like you're saying, that dry layer. I would have thought the first layer you put on your skin is perhaps the most important, is it?
Yes.
Yes and no. It's the right combination.
Yeah, and then the combination on the top. But
yeah,
I just put an old T-shirt on as my base layer.
It's not about layers, it's about layering,
yeah,
which is proactive in understanding. So to understand what is happening and what your choices should be, also you need to have an understanding of your metabolic processes. And everybody is different. We are all individuals, so you need to understand your own metabolism. And so the heat that is coming from your body is produced by what you take in, right? In terms of your nutrition and so on. If you're not taking the right amount of liquid and food in and calories in, you won't be warm enough. So the body has a very interesting way, which evolution has given us over millions of years. Here is mission control.
Pointing to his brain, everybody, just in case anyone's wondering what is body.
Here's mission control.
It's in his head.
We need to make sure this keeps working. As we know, electronics don't work well in the damp, you know. Well, it's the same in the cold. It's the same with our mission control, our head, yeah. So then also looking at my liver area here, this is where it all happens, yeah? And so as you put things in, they are converting. It is converting partly into glycogen, which drives your muscle, and partly into heat. However, this metabolic process here, like any chemical process, is just the same as our metabolic process. It only happens correctly within a very narrow range of temperatures. So if the body thinks that the operation, if your metabolism is at risk because the temperatures aren't right, it does a thing called vasoconstriction, and your hands become cold and your feet become cold because it says, I don't need them. And so I laugh sometimes when I see runners very occasionally running with a short sleeve singlet, but with gloves on.
My favorite.
And that's because vasoconstriction is happening and saying, I need to keep the core warm enough. Otherwise, I'll cut off your hands and feet because we don't need them for now. Because the important thing is, look, yeah, the operating system up in the head and the metabolism. So everybody has a unique type of metabolism. So in making judgments, you all, in terms of your layers and your layer choice, you have to look very carefully at, you have to understand your own metabolic processes. So hypothermia, for example, and sorry, this is your area of expertise, Stu with Mountain Rescue. Hypothermia is not getting cold, simply. Hypothermia is when the core temperature drops and your metabolism isn't working. As Stu knows, then when you go out on a rescue, you can't warm people up by putting food and drink into them because your metabolism is no longer working. Am I right, Stu?
Yeah, pretty much. Our sources of heat are our food and if we're not producing our own heat, and it's not sunshiny because it's raining and all the rest of it, sort of thing, we lose the ability to produce our own heat, and you die.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got to understand a little bit about your metabolism. Then you've got to look at the key things. How about talking about, we've been talking about cold so far, but we also should be looking at the problems of heat.
Does it differ, you know, say, I recently did that Dragon's Back race, super hot in Wales, our kind of maritime climate, sorry, but what if I was, say, something like the Marathon des Sables, would I use a different type of material, maybe not a merino wool, maybe cotton or maybe silk, I don't know,
You use a different garment completely, because the marketing people know and the base layer producers know that people are saying, hey, I don't want something to keep me warm, because that's what they say base layers do. I need to keep it cool. So therefore, the marketing people say, oh, okay, we can produce a test here that shows that this little bit of evaporation from this base layer that keeps you cool. I mean, this is bollocks. This is marketing bollocks, yeah? So what you need to do when it gets warm is to do away with your take your base layer off, and you need a different type of garment. You need a woven garment, not a knitted garment. This is where we talk about reading the garment. A knitted garment is, the knitted base layer is so that it fits closely and wicks away. So now we're into hot weather. You need to allow the body to do what it knows best, which is evaporative cooling. So you use a loose woven garment.
Have you ever run a shirt, Gary, like a shirt you might go to work in type thing?
No.
There was somebody who turned
a shirt,
up on the...
Gary.
Do you own a shirt?
Weddings and funerals, yeah, I've got a shirt.
there was somebody who turned up this year. I was obviously down on the Dragon's Back, and I was part of the kit check team, but somebody came along and sort of said, somebody's come along with a cotton base layer. I think they're possibly an international athlete or competitor, whatever you want to call them. And they come along, and I was like, probably in these conditions, that's possibly the best thing to be wearing. You know, we were 25 degrees plus nearly every day, weren't we? In September. And it's possibly the best thing that they could have been wearing. You know, I've worked in deserts, in the Saharan and Namibian desert and things like that. And, you know, I didn't see very many sort of Berbers running around in like skin tight, white type thing. You know, I saw them walking around in very loose, probably cotton, majority cotton, clothing. You look at things that like T.E. Lawrence was wearing when he was very successful in the desert areas and things like that.
Wow, we've done studies on these. There's bedding clothing is a very interesting area, because there's some really interesting scientific studies on why Bedouin clothing works. Yeah. Mm. And they've also done comparisons between white Bedouin clothing, because some are white and some are black. Again, Chuck, our retired chemical engineer, looked up the original findings and so on. And black, even though it absorbs a lot more heat, still works, because it is creating conduction inside the garment that goes upwards and outwards, yeah? But it's loose. So you must have loose. So although, as you say, Stu, people can still be using cotton clothing, if it is knitted, it is inherently close fitting. And so if you're going to use cotton, you should be using a woven. I've used a woven trekking shirt in cotton, and then with a tightly woven cotton shirt, not shirt, but a jacket, yeah, then it tightens up and so on. So it stands off your body, and you allow your body to do what it knows best, which is evaporative cooling. So put your base layer aside in hot weather conditions.
A lot of people do purchase base layers online, and I was just curious, if somebody's base layer did turn up and it was a bit big for them, we're talking about somebody running through the winter and cooler months, is it correct then they should be having a base layer that is more fitted as opposed to looser?
Yes, it should fit, but the inherent flexibility and stretchability of a knitted textile allows you that sort of flexibility. I remember way back in the early 90s, we were just still in a phase where much of the trends and fashions were to use very, very loose clothing. snowboarding clothing was very, very loose, yeah. And we had to shunt people towards an understanding that a close fit was necessary in order that the textile touched your body and absorbed and wicked the moisture away. So, yes, you should be fairly close fitting.
I'm aware, I'm watching the clock going, I don't want to take up all your days, all your afternoons. So people that are listening to this, I know everybody that's listening to this is going to be going, we need to read this book. We need to go on this course. I definitely am going to. What from both of you, perhaps, though, what are the biggest mistakes you see? Let's start, because I always think if you learn from your mistakes, what is the biggest mistakes you see that people, let's target specifically, let's pinpoint these stupid runners you see with vests and gloves on. What the biggest mistakes you see people with their kit? Should we start with you, Stuart, when you perhaps on the mountain, what you've seen, what people can change, perhaps without spending any money as well?
I think one mistake is not knowing when to put it on or take it off. So you've already bought it, and we talk about SMJ, sound mountain judgment, and part of that is making your decisions based on your experience and the conditions that you find. You know, if you've already bought it, part of those five Fs we were previously talking about is the future is you're not going to just sell it and swap it willy-nilly sort of thing. But when to put it on, when to take it off, when to open it up, when to change your hat, change your gloves, put mittens on. That sort of thing, I think, is probably one of the biggest mistakes. We used to have a phrase about, sometimes you just can't be asked to do this sort of thing. The phrase is be asked.
I love it. I love it.
Be asked sort of thing and get something done about it. You know, if you've got a hot spot on your foot, treat your blister. If you've got a stone in your shoe, take it out. If you need to put your gloves on, take them off, put them on. It sort of sounds very simple.
No, but I believe, like, trusting your gut, you know, we're making it this sound perhaps a little bit with the talk of chemicals and stuff, a little bit more complicated than it is, but trust the brain center, and normally it will tell you. It will instantly, I'm too hot. I'm starting to feel a little bit cold. I'm starting to feel a little bit hungry. Recognize those signs straight away rather than ignore them. And then your hands are cold. You can't change your, you know, you can't feed yourself, or you're wet through before you see the storm coming. You see the black clouds coming. Do it now before it starts raining, basically.
Yeah. And I've got plenty of gut, more so than I have got brains. So That generally leads my decision making.
Yeah, I really agree completely with Stu on that. Do it now. For people new to outdoors and so on, sometimes it's a problem if those sort of people are in with the group, because they will be stopping too frequently and so on. So the leader of the group has to do something, and this is your zone again, Stu, to make sure people are able to move at a similar sort of speed. The other key one is, you mentioned hands, Stu. People, when we look at the issues of hands, people, and we talk to our American friends, he's in the store and his people come in and they're wanting a thin, warm glove. This raises the issue and the problem. The more air and the more thickness you have, the warmer it is. What people don't realize is that layering for hands still is just as applicable as layering for the body. So for your run, you need to ensure that you have more than one pair, several pairs of gloves if conditions are very wet and cold and windy, not only so that you can interchange them and put dry ones on, but overlayer them. So a simple new piece of clothing are thin, non-insulated overmitts. So if you use a simple knitted glove as a first layer, then use a simple single-ply waterproof shell, outer shell. Layering for hands.
A waterproof mitt, which I can then take off if I get a bit of shelter, but then I can leave my glove on underneath and get food out or whatever, and then I put the waterproof. But whether now I'm thinking that has a seam, so whether it actually...
You've got to look at your details and so on. But if you're using a two-layer system, you're on the right road.
One thing I've...
We've not even talked about string vests yet.
My God. You know, my husband's string vest is a whole other podcast, but he swears by it that it's saved his life many times. He's ex-military and he's like, you runners, you all need to be in string vests.
Not a good look, though, is it?
I have to agree. Yeah, the string vest is a very interesting illustration of the point I've made, is that the best insulator is air. And the string vest is another way of providing more dry air. It's just that the pockets are the micro pockets are rather larger than in a standard base layer.
A lot of my base layers have that kind of honeycomb effect, and I suppose that's it. It's just trapping more air down those channels.
Yeah, as long as you keep that layer dry.
A lot of the training that I've done as well with working out what kit I need as well is that, and I think where a lot of runners go wrong too, is they start races too fast that are perhaps in wet, wild conditions. They get hot because the first 10 miles they run like they're Kilian Jornet. Then they slow down, but they've created such a lot of sweat. And then they're wet and then they're cold and they've got nowhere to go from that. So that's something that I've been working on, that I've learned that you need to not create that heat, that sweat. You almost need to put a tap. Interrupt me if I'm wrong here, Mike. But I try and keep that metabolic rate low. So I'm creating enough heat to keep moving for two, three, four days. But I'm not
absolutely right. Spot on.
But you're gonna go, no, Eddie, it's all wrong. And I was gonna go, oh my God, I'm not doing this race. It's all too much for me.
No, I completed the article I wrote about the Hell Runner's Dilemma by saying, well, how do you deal with that? Well, if, for example, you're going to, if you're doing a two-day mountain marathon, so you are going to be in a tent for the night, then you're not really competing against other people. You're really, for the most part, competing against yourself. So it might sound anathema, but slow down. Slow down before you hit the overnight camp. If you look, just looking around, you're in an alpine situation, you're in the Alps. People typically sometimes, they are using a cotton T-shirt to go up to the hut. However, there is always an assumption that the sun will be shining nicely when they arrive at the hut at somewhere between 3 and 4 p.m. And so they lay the cotton T-shirt out on the wall and dry it. But that only works in certain space. It only works when the sun is out. So if you're going in a typical British climate, then you have a lot more things to deal with. Yeah,
we could have a whole... Well, I think I could do 10 episodes with you guys. I've learned more from you two than I did in anything I learned from school. I felt
windproof jacket. That's coming
next
time. I felt the
moment I was back at school, Gary, when we were asked questions that we didn't know the answer to. please come on the podcast again. But if people, I'm sure people will have more questions, want to learn more now about the subject, where can they go? You talked about your performance layering course. Where can people go to find... Is this
look on my website, Outdoor Gear Coach, and look in the blog area there. And I'm running my next course on Monday, the 20th of November, in a few days' time. But we run courses at other times of the year as well. But also, my book is available online at Amazon. Keeping dry and staying warm.
I just like that on a T-shirt, really. Not a T-shirt, not a cotton one, though. No, it would be a nice base layer, keeping dry and staying warm.
We do courses as well with Nav for Adventure, whether it's these Mountain Essentials running courses and things like that. And a lot of the fundamentals that we've talked about are in there as well. It's not just, I think of it as bricks and mortar, bricks being the map, the compass, the rucksack, shoe choice, or whatever it is, But the mortar bits are the bits that all hold it all together. It's like, you know, how'd you learn about sound, mountain judgment if you've never done that sort of thing before? You have to go out and you have to feel cold, or you have to feel really, really hot or miserable or have a wet knickers day. And then all of a sudden you start to understand a little bit more of some of the principles that Mike's been talking about and some of the principles that I've been talking about. So some of the, you know, it isn't just about the bricks, you know, we include the mortar as well within the courses too. And hopefully sometimes we have fun.
Oh, no.
We have just scratched the surface though, my goodness me. Hopefully it helps. You know, people are presented with kit lists when they do races, 20,000 hydrostatic hair, tape seams, base layer. Maybe this will prompt people at least to, you know, scratch a bit and find out a bit more about the...
I think that's one of the biggest things I've taken, Gary, is to think about yourself, like Mike said, think about how you are as a runner, how you work, what gets cold on you, what you hate, and work it. Read the book, go on the course, educate yourself rather than, you know, and I was just thinking, like, rather than listening to what Adidas or Salomon or some man in a factory is saying, go out and try it for yourself. But
sometimes a kit list throws up 100 questions on a Facebook forum, while they could just have, I appreciate they have to put these figures on things just to, I suppose, make it easy for people. Otherwise, they'd just be left in complete turmoil. But yeah, to prompt to have a bit more knowledge about the stuff that you're wearing is super important.
I'd like to just respond on your last point. I have a very good, long-standing friend, and I did my first Kim two-day marathon with him many, many years ago in 1972. And only recently, in the last month, he asked me and said, well, I've got this garment and I'm getting damp. It's leaking. And he named the garment and he said, could I buy something which is closer to what you were producing in the Camlike and so on? And I looked at it. I looked at the garment he was using and I said, look, the specification of this is higher than the specification of my garment. You know, it's a higher hydrostatic head. It's a higher MVTR. So that's not the issue. So I started to tell him some of the details. And he says, you know, I don't want any of these details, Mike. Push off. I just want a turnkey operation. When I buy a car, I push the key in. I don't need to know anything about how the engine works. And so on. So come on, tell me what gives. And I said, that's a very interesting analogy, because when you buy a car, what you are getting is something that has been created by a mixture of Ralph Nader's Raiders, who put drove a lot of safety into it, Toyota principles putting a lot of the reliability into it, plus a lot of legislation. So your tires have to be the right tread diameter, and you have to have an MOT every year when it's over a certain time, and so on and so on and so on. He began to realize just there are no regulations in the mountains,
yeah,
except what counts is experience and a willingness to learn.
Is he still your friend now, or did he go, all right?
He's still my friend.
This is only one.
Oh, I'm your friend now, Mike. I'm going to be sending you emails every day.
Can I just add to that as well, Gary? People do get really, really confused by mandatory kit lists and this, that, and the other. I would just suggest that mandatory kit list that you're reading on whichever event that you've signed up for and trained for, put a lot of emotional and financial backing into. Please think of that mandatory kit list as your minimum, and think of it as, yeah, look at what your weather's going to be doing. As Eddie's just been sort of saying, look at what my own experiences. What am I like? You know, am I a hot person? Or am I a cold person? Do my hands get really, really blanched? And therefore, what do I need to add to my minimum kit list, which is my mandatory kit list? It makes my life a little bit easier when you come to kit check me, when I come to kit check you, I should say. One famous kit check I had once at the Tour of El Velin, somebody came along, they were all a bit nervous, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. And I said, what's on your butties? And they went, oh, I don't know. got everything out of the rucksack and went, oh, I've got cheese and ham. And I was like, oh, I like that. So when you don't eat it, I'll eat it. They were, do you not want to check my kit? And I was like, well, I've just seen you pull everything out whilst you put your butties out, which were at the bottom of your bag. So that then sort of went down and people were coming along showing me the butties, you know, and the year after sort of thing. I was like, I'm not interested in that anymore now. but please have a look at your mandatory kit list as a minimum and think about, there's a website called Be Adventure Smart, actually. And that gives you a little bit of a sort of an aid memoir to think, oh, what do I need? What's the weather going to be like? Have I got knowledge of the area and conditions and have I done a bit of training, blah, blah, blah. Hopefully that makes sense.
Never skimp on your kit. Never skimp on your snacks. Good snacks, good kit.
And never skimp on your skimpies.
Or never. Well, there's a time and a place for a pair of skimpies, but I don't think it's on the mountain.
Yeah, I don't know. Look at Speedo Nick, Mick, or whatever his name is. Anyway, there we go.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Mike and Stuart. No doubt we will flood you with requests to come back on the podcast again. But as an introductory, wow, I've learned so much. I know everybody will have learned so much. And I'm going to hopefully do you proud in a month's time. Freezing cold, I'll think of you. With my gloves, my layering system.
If we can help in any way, please get in touch, obviously.
Thank you. Do you want a full, I could give you a full rundown, kit, snacks?
Let's do that off.
Thank
after
you.
After 9 o'clock.
Yeah. Take care of yourselves and we'll speak to you soon.
Okay. Take care. Thank you very much, Eddie. Thanks, Gary. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Bye.
Loved that. I loved that. I think, Gary, you felt a bit overfaced by all that knowledge. You didn't know what to do with it, but you've come out the other side now. Go and grab the book if you want just a little. It's a great, it's not big. Just flip through. You can pick out a little bit of, it's really interesting about how kit's made, the history of the kit. Oh, just so much stuff that you don't know about kit. And I never even really thought about, I think that's, I feel quite silly about, of I've never really even thought about how you make it and then how that transpires to how you wear it, its longevity, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you so much, Stuart and Mike, for coming on the podcast. I definitely feel there should be an episode 2.
Well, I was overwhelmed because I'm that person who Mike even said about a friend that wants his turnkey approach. He doesn't want to know how the car works. He just wants to get in the car and drive. And yeah, guilty. That is.
But it's so important to know how it works because you don't want to be at the side of the motorway with a light on, and also you don't want to be in a 70 miles and, you know, you want to be preempting it. So you want to go, the weather's changing, my effort's changing, you know, I'm stopping, what do I, you know, you need a system, basically, don't you?
Yeah.
And that takes practice. And so many races end, especially the longer races, and it doesn't even need to be in winter. So many races end because people get too hot, too cold, and they're just not looking after themselves. And a lot of that comes down to management of like your body temperature, especially as we get tired and we move slower as well. So I learned a lot. I hope everybody else did as well.
Tales from the Trails. Yeah, always my favorite part of the show. It's over to our listeners. First of all, Strava Club, Beth and Chapman.
She's going to wear her pants. She is going to wear her pants at this moment. So prepare yourself.
117 miles, heavy flex. Oh, who's top of the charts for time on feet too? Surprise, surprise. Beth and Chapman, 27 hours, 19 minutes and 23 seconds. And clean sweep, Eddie. I'm not too sure if this has ever happened before, but Bethan Chapman again, 19,495 feet. That is a heavy flex, but yeah, lockdown.
Can you guess what she was doing? Our Bethan's my friend, everybody. So I know she lives out here in a neighboring village. We do a lot of running together. Shout out to the Chapman. But can you guess what she was doing? She was in England. Oh. Running a route.
Oh, well, spine, because it's not huge elevation.
That's pretty much the whole route. Yep, she did the whole route. Probably a little bit of extra running before. What's coming up?
We got York Nutrition coming up.
Yes.
Oh, straight in there.
She's not actually doing the arc, but she was running with Sabrina Vijay and a few friends who are doing the arc. So she went over to visit some family, I think, and then to Recce it. And I said to her, are you now going to run it? And she was like, no, nope, I feel I've done nope. It. It's a lovely day. We had three lovely days. Saw it all. Don't feel the need to do it. She did say, oh, it's very different from around here because the ups and downs are so much shorter than ups and downs here. It's like constant up and down. Whereas here it's like you won once you start going uphill, you settle in for an hour or so.
That's how you do it, wasn't it? Do it over 3 days.
Awesome. Oh yeah, I love a recce. Love a recce.
Awesome. Awesome running, Bethan.
Deals from the drills. Hi, Gary and Eddie. Being one of your biggest fans. Stop it. And never missing a week of your podcast, I thought I'd send in my own tale from the trails. I love listening to these, often making me cry or laugh out loud. We love them too. Having had a year of ups and downs, including injuries and personal issues, my running and walking, our beloved Axel, who's a boxer, has been my therapy. As you're both dog lovers, you can imagine our devastation, hubby and three kids. Okay, they're 26, 19 and 16, but they're still my kids. Oh, of losing Axel on July the 1st, a week after his 10th birthday. The pain has been something I don't think I'll ever get over. He really was my best friend, keeping me company when the kids were at school, and now the older two have left home. Oh, I get that. I feel you. I was training for the Loch Ness 24, taking place at the end of August. I decided I'd do my own Axel Ultra, just run and remember all the great times he'd brought our family, which were so many. He hated the sea and would cry when the kids went in to paddle. If you sat on the floor, he'd sit on your legs and would lie on your feet if you sat on a chair. I was having a great run, being fueled along the way with tailwind and active route, but my treat was my bottle of Coke. Managing to run almost 28 miles, on just tailwind and active route, I decided I was ready for some full fat Coke. Yeah. Not wanting to stop to take off my vest to get the Coke or to faff putting it back on, etc., I was going up a steep beach pass when I saw a guy, must have been about 17 or 18, coming down. I stopped him and asked, could you get my Coke out from my vest? He smiled and said, yes, no problem. Then went on to say how great the day was. Then he stopped and looked at me, and with a weird look on his face, he asked, oh, is it a bottle of Coke you want? Yeah, thanks, I replied, thinking nothing of the change in his attitude, thanked him as he glowered at me and ran on for a few miles. Having had plenty of Coke and with only a mile or so to go, I didn't want to stop to put the Coke back into the vest again. So I asked a lady sitting at a bench if she'd put it back in the vest. Again, like the young man, she started off so pleasant. Then as she zipped me up, she gave me a quiet stare. Again, I really didn't think much of it. I was almost finishing my Axel Ultra, which turned out to be 31 miles, and chuffed as I still felt I could go further. So I'm in the kitchen feeling happy and start to unpack my vest, unzipping the back, taking out my bottle of Coke. And then it hits me, and I inwardly groan and cringe, as there is a white clear bag, a bag of white powder. Oh my gosh, I'm cringing as I type. My tailwind for adding to water along the route. This is why the guy had asked, is it the bottle of Coke? And why the lady had given me the quiet look. I honestly wanted to run back and explain to them both when it was from a running, honest. Telling my kids, even they went, oh, mom, that's so bad, and laughed. And the telling of my story to my work friends ended up with, ah, so that's how you can run for so long, and lots of teasing. We still miss Axel, and I still find myself crying while out running. But then I remember his run and how it's made so many people giggle. I hope it gives you and your listeners a giggle too. On a side note, I'd just like to say thanks for providing such a great podcast. I absolutely love it. And I feel like I'm catching up with friends. Lots of love, Karen Much. Oh, I love that story.
That is so funny.
I also love the fact that she, when you're in the midst of this sort of stuff, you just don't, you're like, you people that you ask for help. I've asked people to like do up shoelaces before when your legs are like just random people. Yeah. You are there to help. You'll understand. And why should
I've never had that. I've never traveled overseas and portioned, say, a tailwind or something like that.
So Coke in France is coca. So, and Coke is Coke, the drug.
Okay.
Oh, I remember going to a checkpoint when we recently moved here and asking for Coke and the guy being like, I thought you're so crap. Shut up. Just give me, you know what I want. Well, I don't mind. Should I have a bit of snort or something? Get me going on the train.
I can't imagine.
You can't imagine anything else.
Oh, bless you, Karen. Thanks for the story.
Karen, for sharing. And I don't know, maybe when the grieving period is over for Axel, maybe another little running pup might be in your future. Who knows? But I know it takes time to get over these things, and we send you lots of love. We love reading your story. So if you have a Tales on the Trails, please send it over to hello@tandtrails.com.
We've still got loads of 5-star reviews. Eddie, Jada Pop-Up, how are you doing?
Oh my God. Come on, I need about 6 of these. I should have just popped in last week when I was groveling around the floor, wiping up vomit to read it.
All right, we'll start at the top. Love Eddie and Gary's run chat. Loved episode 45 and hearing about Neil's race. As a fellow Scot, it was great to hear about races I've also done. Neil is such a down-to-earth, great guy, not a funny, Gary. You can easily do the West Highland Way race and I'll support you. No excuses now. Oh, wow. It's out there. I would love it. Absolutely. Yeah. And if I've got support, I've got no excuses, have I? The show flew by this week and I can't wait to hear next week's installments. Saving it for my ultra. Oh, my goodness. Nixteth 100. Let us know how you got on.
You can run slow and laugh hard. I can't run at all and laugh because I've had 3 kids. I have to stop and cross my legs, but maybe Abs Claudine doesn't have that problem. Super podcast. Eddie and Gary, I've been listening from the middle of the other one when I was an ultra newbie. Since the start of Tian Trails, I've loved every episode. Details, coaches and giggles getting me through longer runs and filling my head with cold spines and long Lakeland 50s. I've been through the highs and lows with your honest weekly training updates and race escapades. The difference, I think, that this podcast has over many others is the sense of it being from two real running friends, sharing a common love with the rest of us, laughs, tears and all. Oh, and a little dragon and some chapter. Nipples. You have inspired me to You have inspired me to aim for more and push harder, but always do it with a fun orange buff neck warmer. Brilliant and always getting funnier podcast. I look forward to my weekends for a long run with Eddie and Gary. Long may it last, guys. Abs Glodin. We love it. Love it. Love hearing from you.
We have been PG for quite a while, Eddie. There's been no nipples, little baby dragons.
As the winter sets in. And it's really, we don't have any heating in our house. We just have the fire. So when the fire's lit, it needs to be lit at like mid-afternoon and then the house is warm for everybody else. Me working from home, that doesn't matter. Apparently, I just have to freeze my most of the day. So what I do is I have a shower and then I run downstairs and I get changed in front of the fire, like old Victorian. Anyway, I was doing that. Of course, I was doing that the other day. It was this morning, to be honest. And I ran downstairs and our neighbour who was heading up the road got a full, what the full? And I know He looked in and he must have seen my face go, but it was too late. I couldn't do anything. I was fully committed to the getting dressed process. And so I reckon, though, he's probably many times he's seen me in various states.
That's a Tales from the Trails.
Oh, I don't know. I think people have heard those stories. It's tricky because our windows like go out and even though the road's not busy, you're sort of like I'm drawn to the window to get changed.
Oh, God, yeah. I catch myself doing things sometimes and like, oh, maybe I should close the curtains if my neighbour's watching.
Oh, what are you doing, Gary?
I'm just walking around naked half the time. I'm a free spirit, Eddie. I'm a free spirit.
Please leave a review. If you have left a review, many thanks. We will get around to reading them all out. Please head over to Apple Podcasts where you can type us as long or short a review as you like.
So how's it looking for next week? So all the kids are at school.
The kids are at school. Bless them. So we started off easy. I'm just like trying to get back in to get my body moving again now. It all feels a bit strange. Oh no, it is snowing now. It sort of turned to rain. So we've been covered in snow now. It's annoying when the early snow, so the lifts, the high lifts will open next weekend, but until like just before Christmas, all the tractors that are set up to be snow plows and clear the road, they're still working on building everybody's chalets. So they don't clear the roads properly. And so this morning they cleared like one track. So if you meet somebody coming up the road, you're like, so what normally takes like 10 minutes school run takes like half an hour because you have to drive so slow because there's so much snow. And then they don't piece the cross-country tracks until January. So and so if they're not clearing the roads, it's a bit dangerous to run on the road because everybody's like trying to get by one bit and there's loads of snow on the edge. They don't, so that when they clear the road normally, then the little chap will come up with his like side clearer. So where the snow plows just pushed it off to the road, then this little guy in the job that I would definitely do if someone asked me what job would you like to do, he just like sucks it up and blows it out the top and it like clears the road, so then you can run. It's so satisfying.
I'd love that job. Yeah,
podcast on, off I go, just blowing snow into everybody's driveway and into everyone's face and everything. Oh, I knocked my phone off, I got so excited. They don't do that for a while, so the road, you can't really run on the road, you can't run the track. Oh, always annoying. But anyway, got my treadmill, so I won't even try and run on snow, knee-deep snow, can't bother with that. I'm old. So I'll just get a couple of days like easy running, get back into it, and probably stick to the treadmill for the next few days. The snow will probably it won't all disappear, but the roads will be clear within a day or so. So I'll be able to run a bit on the road, hopefully get back down to the gym. I can do my strength here, but I kind of like going to the gym as well because it's got a cafe.
My gym's so basic. I've got nothing like that. You know, a protein shake.
That's new. This was only built like maybe a year ago, 2 years ago. So it's super new. Yep, might be turning a year older, Gary. This is not going in the direction I hoped. oh boy, do I feel it. My lovely friends keep messaging going, what, do you want to do something? You know, and I'm like, nope, I don't do anything.
Yeah.
I don't want to do anything. I feel it's all important to celebrate your birthday. Because no one else is going to. So I sent Bryn quite an extensive birthday want list.
I love it. And
we're going to go out for a Sunday roast, which should be nice.
Ooh, that sounds like a treat.
Nice. And yeah.
Kids, when you look back in the mirror, do you think you look your age?
Oh my God, Gary. I mean, I look at myself and I think, no wonder Bryn turns his head when the drum's noggin. where is it in Robin Hood where Maid Marian, Robin comes back and she gets her like handmaid to appear and she's quite a large lady and he goes, oh Marian, the years have been kind. I feel like the age that I am, the wrinkles have set in, everything's droopy, nothing, my skin is wrinkly.
I can vary during the day though. At some points I think, I'm looking so bad, but then I look again and I'll crash down to earth.
Yeah, it depends on the mirror and the lighting. Sometimes you can be like, oh, I'm there. Ooh, I'm looking pretty good. Then you go in another, like an overhead bathroom light and you're like, oh no. Oy, oy, oy. Anyway, it's not how old you are, it's how old you feel. And I feel as old as I am at the moment. I'm hoping, you know, I feel better. So, so the kids, we've got football. I think the football might be finished now, thank goodness, with the snow. But we've got a kids' Christmas show, 2 hours of watching dancing. But I don't mind, because do you know what I'll do, Gary? Take a flask of tea. Nobody will talk to me. And I'm just going to sit in there and enjoy.
Put your headphones on.
Listen to the Teen and Girls podcast.
Yeah.
So we'll have, everyone will be at home. It'll be nice. That's all. I mean, I feel like family. I just love in family time. I'm not really, but when we've done the Winter 200 and we're back, I do feel it's important that you should celebrate your birthday because it's be thankful. I laugh saying I'm old, but I don't care. I still feel great. Still going off and doing all this crazy stuff. When I come back and I will share it on the podcast, I will go out for a day skiing with my mates and we'll go to après-ski and I'll have 3 drinks and Bryn will have to drive me home. And that one.
Yeah, obviously we're lucky. Like with my, when I turned 50, I literally just could have forgot that even happened. That was my mentality. But Lisa, she really wanted to mark it on reflection. I think it was the right decision. I had a lovely time.
Uh-oh. This does not.
I know I've been in the green for weeks and weeks and weeks, and we all had
an 8x3 minutes. That was going to take you down.
We had like a top Trump's HRV in the pub on Thursday, and mine was like smugly in the green. But yeah, as soon as I do that, now it's a couple of days of unbalanced. We'll keep an eye on that and hopefully do better down the gym this week. I think I will because I'm not, although, well, I've got a big run on Sunday, but hopefully because I'm not driving anywhere and going away for the week. And then, hopefully I'll get that done. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. I've got this ultimate direction.
To the 3 YouTube subscribers, they will be disappointed.
But I've been testing out the Fast Pack 30, which was a mega popular pack on the Spine Race. I think whether it was the most popular one or not, anecdotally, that's the one I noticed the most. Esme thought I look like I work for IKEA, which is quite funny. It's blue and yellow. Backpack. And because it's
you
like
just a place that I've lost that screw because I just can't get it in.
In Allen Key. But because I think I'd shared some Instagram posts and I had this vest on, I got a few DMs, Spine Race coming up or anything like that. But no, 100%.
I said it again. Not tough enough, people.
But maybe, you know, if we do the in 2024, I think it could be good for that. Get all the bits and bobs in. Sessions wise, pretty much of the same. I think I've got a threshold one to do. Only 10 minutes though, long run, some strides, which I've already done the strides. So that's a good start to the week. And then a big session, 5x5 minutes. Part of me, because I really enjoy this on the treadmill, part of me is looking forward to it, but 5 minutes.
What sort of pace are you going at?
I'll just get in that. What's the half marathon pace? I suppose that's the effort for that. Maybe even a bit faster, actually, probably 10K pace, but it's got a generous recovery on it. So we'll see. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's a big test. See where I am after that. 25 minutes of work for my level of runner. That I class that as quite a big workout. The weekend though, yeah, it's the Why We Run weekend this Sunday. So I had planned to go to Castlane Dean, but we've got some beers on Saturday evening, so I didn't want to be going over there with a hangover, so I'm going to be running around Castlane Dean, hungover too, maybe not. I'll probably have about 4 beers tops. Pop along, you know, if you're local, don't want to drive in all over the country to come and join me. If you're local at least, then pop along. Keatley Company, I'm planning on doing, I say it's ultra, but I think people think, is ultra 50K? I'm happy if I do anything 26.3, I'm going to call it a day then. But yeah, maybe if you don't want to travel to see me, do something where you are, share the hashtag Why We Run. I'll pop a link in the show notes to Nathan's Just Giving page. So if you can afford to, pop a few quid in the pot, then yeah, you can donate via that. But nothing family-wise, yeah, I'm really craving the cinema. I've not been to the cinema for ages, so I'd like a trip to the cinema. Let's see, maybe Sunday evening.
Should we go to the cinema? If like, we can, is there one on the route? We could just pop in for my nap, like, and I sleep through the film and you can watch.
I think our tastes are probably very different.
I don't care because I'm going for the feet, so you can just, in the popcorn, you can choose.
Right, it's time to go and get that kettle on. Thank you, Precision Fuel and Hydration, for sponsoring the show. Thank you to our partners and patrons too. We couldn't do this without you and your ongoing support. Be kind to future self, breathe and believe. Progress, not perfection. And don't forget to like, subscribe, share, and give us a follow. Tell your mates, tell everybody about the Tea and Trails podcast.
You are awesome. Well done, everybody. If you're out on your long run, if you're just dropping that child off at school, waving them fondly goodbye, my sweet child. Or perhaps you're just finishing off that bit of work. I quite like listening to podcasts when I'm working because it focuses.
No,
says Gary. Really? I have some that are like, I would say, maybe are like ours. It's more twittering.
Podcast for running, music for working.
Oh, no. If I had music on, I'd start moving. I went for the intro because I'm totally by myself all day, every day. Are you by yourself all day, every day, Gary? I don't know.
Most of the time, yeah.
What you're doing with your curtains shut and open. I like the company.
Got a party through that door.
Anyway, have the best of weekends. Best of luck if you're racing, long runs. Oh, I had the best wild wee this Windy Gap, you know, I talked about earlier, Wolf Prince. Yeah. I was like, this is a spot to mark my territory.
Yes.
Cold though. That was cold on the cheek. Keep sharing your picks. Why not listen to the UK's number one trail running podcast and warm yourself up with your favorite brew. Dry decaffeinated changed my life. Anyway, must stop talking. We've got things to do, Gary. My name is Eddie Sutton.
And I'm Gary Thwaites.
And that was episode 49 of the Tea and Trails podcast.